Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. In the first sign of any real movement on the migration issue in the European Union in the last years, member states reached a deal this week to strengthen the EU's asylum agency. The agreement means the European Asylum Support Office will be upgraded to the European Union Asylum Agency, which will have increased autonomy and a mandate to monitor the asylum agencies of individual member states. European Commission Vice President Margaritis Schinas said the agreement is a first important foundation in the effort to build an effective European-wide asylum system. Expert Angeliki Dimitriadi joins The Greek Current to break down this latest agreement and to look at the broader challenges still facing the European Union and frontline states like Greece when it comes to migration. Angeliki Dimitriadi is Senior Research Fellow and Head of the Migration Program at ELIAMEP, the Hellenic Foundation for European and Foreign Policy, where her research focuses on Europe, particularly frontline countries and countries of transit. Angeliki, welcome onto The Greek Current podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Angeliki, this week the European Parliament and the Council agreed on a deal to strengthen the European Union's asylum agency. And this is the first sign of any real movement on migration in the bloc for years. What changes are being put in place and how significant are they?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. It is a very significant step in some ways, precisely because it really took 5 years to reach an agreement on anything really regarding the reform of the asylum system in the EU. And though this particular reform, I would say, is not as important as, for example, reforming the Dublin system, it is absolutely a step in the right direction. EASO, which now becomes European Union Agency of Asylum, instead of a support office, acquires much more personnel, obviously a larger budget. 500 new officials will be provided, in principle, for more effective support to national asylum systems that face a high caseload or pressure in times of crisis, which means the agency will have a bigger role in national asylum processing, but most importantly, in screening applicants in the frontline countries when they arrive, which can be both positive but also a little bit problematic. How things unfold will depend on how much EASO is monitored, how transparent it becomes as an agency. We should keep in mind that the agencies that work at the external borders, and I'm thinking of Frontex right now, don't really have the best reputation in recent years. EASO itself has already come under fire in the last couple of years for poor quality decisions in Greece and for maladministration by the EU Ombudsman. So it's a step in the right direction, but we should be a little bit cautious about how the agency will proceed and how things will unfold. It is, however, a significant step as regards the dynamics of negotiations. And I say this because the proposals in the new pact are controversial and they were received with a lot of concern from many member states, especially frontline states like Greece and Italy. Some member states have pushed for separate negotiations of the different legislative proposals. For example, splitting a deal on EASO or Eurodac from the bigger migration package, which also includes returns and asylum qualification and detention. The Med 5 until now insisted that either the whole legislative package is negotiated as one block and agreed upon, or nothing moves. And to an extent, this was a correct strategy because it gave them leverage. But on the other hand, it delayed any prospects of reform. And with the German and especially the French elections fast approaching, some progress is important and necessary on asylum. And in that sense, the agreement that was reached suggests that the frontline states are willing to be more pragmatic, I would say, in their negotiations. And they now allow for the breaking up of the migration package into these so-called mini deals. And they are reaching agreements on less controversial issues like EASO without compromising too much. For example, the agreement that is reached now on the asylum agency is tied to what is known as a sunrise clause, which means that any new measures related particularly to screening, which is the major concern and objection, if you'd like, of the frontline states, will only be fully implemented when an agreement is reached on the rest of the migration package. So we have a long way to go, but at least some progress has been made.
Given that there aren't really any other deals on migration on the horizon, what does this mean for this asylum reform, especially now, as you mentioned, the sunrise clause?
I would say that there is a potential for a deal when it comes to the Eurodac recast proposal, the fingerprinting regulation, which again is more of an administrative technical matter. So it doesn't really address any of the core issues in the bloc when it comes to asylum processing. But there are some hopes that Slovenian presidency, which I think started yesterday, they have indicated that they're willing to move ahead with negotiations deal on Eurodac, and they might be successful. But obviously, both EASO and a potential Eurodac deal do not address the crux of the problem that we have right now in the EU. The question of solidarity and burden sharing, the question of the pre-screening that the new pact is proposing, and what will that mean for frontline states in terms of how they will manage arrivals and how long they will have to manage these arrivals for. The fact that Dublin is realistically maintained, albeit under a different name, but it's still there. Core of the system is still there. The question of returns, who takes responsibility for how long, under what circumstances. So all these are issues that are not being addressed. The danger is that as we move forward in the year ahead, and as I said, with the elections coming up in some key member states, the danger is that no agreement is reached on the core facets of the migration package. And on the one hand, one could say no deal is better than a really bad deal. But on the other hand, it means that the status quo is maintained. And it's a status quo that is particularly problematic for frontline states, but also for the asylum seekers that are arriving.
Angeliki, last Thursday, the European Commission proposed about 3.5 billion euros in funding to Turkey for migration management through 2024. This was part of a larger proposal for 5.7 billion euros over 4 years to third countries that host large numbers of refugees and migrants. Can you talk about this decision and more broadly agreements with third countries and their effectiveness? You know, what are the pros and cons of these deals?
The extension, if you'd like, of the EU-Turkey statement, with specifically the monetary extension of the deal, was to an extent expected. The Commission and the Member States have been, from the beginning, very keen on continuing to provide financial assistance to Turkey, which realistically hosts right now the largest number of Syrian refugees in the broader neighborhood. I think it was positive that a portion of the money was split and will now be diverted to countries like Jordan and Lebanon that have also been facing significant challenges through the hosting of a very large number of Syrian refugees. And that is positive. It's positive that this has now been acknowledged by the Commission, and there is now a realization also that it's not sufficient to only provide assistance to Turkey, that financial assistance, ideally in the form not of an emergency funding, but in development programs and integration programs, has to be extended in the wider region. I am a little bit less optimistic about whether the funding that has been provided to Turkey will suffice to result in a full implementation of the EU-Turkey statement, which is what Greece would have hoped. And a full implementation would mean picking up again returns to Turkey. I'm less optimistic on whether the amount that is being offered and the way that this has been renegotiated will be sufficient in the long run. But it remains to be seen. Broadly speaking, though, the EU-Turkey statement has sort of paved the way for these so-called informal deals. I say informal because neither the deal with Turkey nor the deal that the joint way forward with Afghanistan that has also recently been renewed, nor any of the deals that are currently being considered for African countries have the approval of the European Parliament. So they are informal in the sense that usually they take the form of a press statement or a gentleman's agreement. They are problematic in the sense that they predominantly seek to deter migratory flows, and they seek to deter migratory flows by funding and extending border guards and border security measures in countries that are not necessarily safe. In fact, I would say most of them are not safe for at least a portion of the population that is either originating from them or transiting from these countries. They are also a little bit problematic because deterrence in itself is not a migration management solution. We can deter up to a point, but as 2015 has shown, if a crisis erupts in the neighborhood, refugees need to flee, and they usually need to flee somewhere nearby. And they also need to go to places like the EU where there are still viable asylum systems, which means deterrence in itself is not a cure, and it's not a sustainable long-term solution. The second aspect, which I think is problematic with these deals, is the fact that they are increasingly linking trade, development, humanitarian assistance, foreign policy, the question of visa and access to the EU for the citizens of these countries, these are all bundled up together into one big negotiating package. And the prerequisite is cooperation on migration, and specifically cooperation on reducing irregular migratory flows, which include in them usually also asylum seekers. And this has been criticized from the beginning as an approach because, yes, everything in a sense is interconnected, but at the same time, some aspects of assistance and some aspects of especially financial assistance, development, capacity building, good governance, all these things should be to an extent kept separate from migration management because they are crucial in any case for a good neighborhood policy, if you'd like, of the EU. So linking them with migration is a little bit problematic. There are some pros. Some of these deals boost civil society, which is a crucial voice in a lot of these countries, and it's necessary to be supported. As I said, they do support through projects, capacity building, and good governance, which is in itself also important. And in some cases, they allow for these third countries to enter a negotiating table on a more equal term, acknowledging that the relationship with the EU is bidirectional. Both sides have to give and both sides have to gain from these negotiations and from the partnerships that are formed. And it's not only one-sided. It's not only the EU that needs to gain or that holds all the leverage, as we've seen through the EU-Turkey statement. And I think that in the grand scheme of things of the foreign policy dimension of migration is an important win.
Angeliki, we've seen since the migration crisis began in 2015, this message of deterrence from the broader European Union. And since this government in Greece was elected, we've seen that message come from Athens as well. You mentioned that deterrence isn't really a viable long-term solution on migration. What would you propose instead? Are there specific areas where you think there should be more of a focus?
The problem with migration is that it originates from somewhere else, right? It starts from the third country. So the foreign policy dimension of migration is increasingly critical. And one of the things that I think countries like Greece has not quite understood is that these are citizens of the countries that we seek to reach deals with. How badly they are treated actually affects and impacts the relationship with these third countries. Another element which I think has not been fully acknowledged is the fact that when deterrence is the key message, and I'm including here forced returns as a form of deterrence, the impact on the economy of these countries is significant because they lose remittances, which means if we want to create a migration governance system that is structured along the lines of asylum on the one hand for those who need it, so access to the asylum process, and certain guarantees provided that that asylum process will not be fast-tracked, but will be properly structured in such a way to allow for the individual to be heard, their case be heard and fully examined. And on the other hand, to have a system of returns that ensures that those who do not have the right to remain in the EU actually do get returned. Because right now what we have is an imbalance. We have people applying for asylum being rejected, but not being returned to their countries of origin or to the third countries, which, of course, exacerbates an already problematic situation when it comes to reception and conditions of reception in countries like Greece. So if we want to have an equilibrium between those who apply for asylum and those who are returned, it means that we need to have a viable working relationship with these third countries, a viable working relationship with these third countries that is not based on poor treatment of their citizens or of making demands without offering something in return. And that includes every country in the EU, including Greece. And I think some countries in the EU have come to realize this quite early on. Greece is still in a little bit of a denial on this subject. A viable migration policy requires legal pathways of entry. And it requires legal pathways of entry both for asylum seekers. Now, that can be in the form of resettlement, participating in the global resettlement scheme, which Greece does not, or individual resettlement schemes with specific countries. Other EU member states have gone ahead and done that in the past. So that's one avenue that could be pursued. Legal pathways of entry also for economic migrants, because abject poverty may not be a reason to apply for asylum, but it's definitely a reason to flee one's country and seek better living conditions. So circular migration pathways for economic migrants. Let's all remember the impact of COVID-19 in the agriculture in Greece last year when there were no working hands to pick the crops. And it resulted in the destruction of tons of products, which could have otherwise potentially been picked, distributed, and utilized in different manner. Spain had a similar situation. Italy had a similar situation, as did Portugal. They sought to address it with some form of temporary legalization of migrant workers, for example, which again, Greece did not. So legal pathways of entry is absolutely essential, both for economic migrants, even if we're talking about specific time limits on this, again, circular migration being an example, but also for asylum seekers. And this would be an incentive for the third countries to actually work with Greece on returns. If they know that a portion of their citizens or those who are transited will be able to reach an EU member state and legally work and be protected under a human rights framework and not being poorly treated, they are a lot more likely to have an incentive because they don't lose so much from remittances to actually work with the Greek government or any of the EU member states' governments and create a viable mechanism also for returns. So these are issues that have yet to be addressed here in Greece. And I think down the road, this is something that it's going to remain a big problem, especially as some, as I said, EU member states are already taking steps in that direction.
Angeliki, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you for having me.
In other news, the fugitive deputy leader of Greece's neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party was jailed on Friday, hours after his capture by the police's anti-terrorism division. Christos Papas, a 59-year-old former lawmaker, had been on the run for nearly 9 months, disappearing before a court sentenced him to 13 years in prison for participation in a criminal organization. He was arrested late on Thursday in an apartment in an Athens suburb, along with a woman who was facing charges for aiding and abetting a fugitive. Police led Papas to a high-security prison in central Greece following a brief court appearance. Papas and 56 other Golden Dawn members were convicted in a landmark trial last October. Finally, the United States on Thursday added Turkey to a list of countries that are implicated in the use of child soldiers over the past year, placing a NATO ally for the first time on such a list. The State Department determined in its 2021 Trafficking in Persons report that Turkey was providing tangible support to the Sultan Murad Division in Syria, a faction of the Syrian opposition that Ankara has long supported and a group that Washington said recruited and used child soldiers. In a briefing call with reporters, a senior State Department official also made a reference to the use of child soldiers in Libya. Countries placed on this list are subject to restrictions on certain security assistance and commercial licensing of military equipment, absent a presidential waiver. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.